country are you from originally?
Hungarian. I'm from Hungary.
From Hungary?
Yes, the heart of Europe. Not Eastern Europe, it's the heart of Europe. We connect East and West together.
Really? So what's going on in Hungary? Why did you come to the United States?
I came to the United States because, first of all, both of my sisters were already here, and my mom could hardly wait for me to finish college to come here. But I also said that I really wanted to learn English. I didn't really want to come to America per se, but I wanted to learn English, and I wanted to get education overseas somewhere. And then, you know, I applied to different universities, and in New Jersey, Montclair State University found my grades good enough, and they offered me a scholarship. And that's how I ended up here.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're here, and you are here on the edge with me and my brains. That's Dr. Clara Govich from Hungary. Now she is here in the United States. Brains, let me tell you, she is an Olympic golfer. Oh, yes. We're going to talk about the swing, the tee time, the hole-in-ones, all of that good stuff. But she's also a professor, and she is deeply involved with her students, not only educating them, but we're going to talk about this return back to the classroom environment and what that looks like. Because it's scary, Brains. So help me welcome her to the edge, Dr. Clara. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for the invitation. I've been following your podcast, and it's just, it's an honor to be here because I know that our brains are going to be exchanging some ideas, and I'm 100% sure that your audience is going to love it. I can assure you of that.
Well, you just are super special, and not only do you do all of that, but you're also a caregiver. So let's start with your story. Tell us a little bit about you, Dr. Clara.
Okay, so a couple of things that I kind of weave into it. One is, my story is about truly, not the cliche is a cliche because it's true. It's truly about never, ever giving up. That's what my story is. Even when I was born, I was not supposed to be born. My mom had a tumor, and it took all the, you know, nutrition and everything out of my system. So I was, you know, they thought I'm never going to come out alive. But I did. I fought through it. I did. A bunch of these things happened along the way. Oh, no, you're never going to be going to college. I barely passed elementary school because I didn't care about studies. I was caring about my sports. I wanted to be an Olympian. That was the only thing I wanted to do. So then I finished college in one of the top 10s, and I was told, no, there's no way that you're going to go to America because, you know, it's Americans are, it's just a different world. You don't even speak English, all that stuff. Well, guess what? I came to America on a scholarship. I just never gave up on my dreams. I never gave up on my Olympic dreams. I never gave up on my business dream. I just don't give up on my dreams. And honestly, that's the biggest story for me. And that's why I also built my Facebook group with Rock Your Resilience and Rebuild, is because in today's society, it's so just so easy to give up because we are given so many really so many hits on our lives, one after the other. And this is exactly the time when we can't give up. So that's essentially my story, is I just never give up.
We can't give up. You know, it's a culture of quitting.
Everybody, yes,
wants that instant gratification. They want to be satisfied. They want it right now. They don't want to wait. They don't want to be patient. And you know what? There is there's a learning in the patience. There is something that resonates in your soul when you're patient. There's a certain love that exudes when you're patient. So you got a lot of stuff going on. Let's talk about your education. You are a professor. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was, again, one of those things where I just decided that when I was getting my master's at Montclair State, honestly, I love to be a physical education teacher, but I looked around and I saw, wow, I like how professors live. I really do. I mean, I get to play the sports because I'm teaching it to my students. Then I get to, you know, use my brain, which is essential for me. I really love doing that. And to do that very, very flexible hours, I said, I like this. So I'm not your normal high achiever that says, oh, I want to be this. I want to be, you know, the president. I want to be the whatever. No, I want what my heart calls for. And even if it seems selfish sometimes, I believe that that's what we are here on earth to do, is our heart calls for something. So when you wake up every morning and something is nagging at you and say, hey, I really want you to do this, I listened to that. And I didn't always listen to that, but I realized when I look back in my life that if I listen to it, it's always going to take me to the right place. So I listened to this. I studied my brains off, and I got a scholarship, 3 different scholarships to, one was Ohio State, one for UMass Amherst, and one for UNCG in North Carolina. And I chose UMass Amherst, and I got my doctorate because I wanted that life. That's why, not because I, you know, I had some kind of, you know, box to pick up.
Well, it's one heck of a life, because not only are you a physical education teacher, but you're also an Olympic golfer. How did you get into the Olympics? Number one, how did you pick golf? Because I love to watch it. I know all the rules. I can drive a mean golf cart, and I can pour a mean cocktail. But honey, I will tear up the green and miss the ball every time. That is such a sport. How did you get involved in golf?
Well, again, you follow your dream. When I was young, I wanted to be an Olympian. That was the only thing I wanted to do. And my family were, you know, really like my mother, my sister, they were high level athletes. And somehow my mom, who was also coaching in that level, she just thought that it's not really good for me to do that because it just requires so much time away from family. Long story short, I never really had the opportunity, but I had a phenomenal life, don't get me wrong, but that dream stuck with me the whole time. And then as I was getting older, I realized that there is such thing as the Senior Olympics, which has state, national, and international competitions, just the same way as the Olympics. And I said, you know what? I just want to be an Olympian. So last year, when I was able to play for the first time, I chose to enter in the Olympics. And last year, the only chance I could do was in golf because I had an injury, and the injury limited me. I was going to enter in tennis, table tennis, and golf, but I just entered in golf, and that's how it happened. I won the New Jersey State Senior Olympics in my age group, and next year I'm going to be representing New Jersey in the national competition in the Senior Olympics.
If we get out the house, hell.
Well, we will get out because I believe in that, because some kind of form of, again, this can be controversial. So everybody has to, you know, express their own opinion. I'm a daughter of a physician. I love medical science. I actually have that as the back of my head that when I retire, I may even go and get my medical license. I want to learn. I love that stuff. But the long story short is I believe that something is going to significantly impact this situation with the virus, and we will be just fine.
Okay. Well, I'm holding on to your optimism because I'm not so much worried about the virus. I'm just worried about all the repercussions and all the kerfuffle going on around it. Like sending students back to school. I want to talk to you about that. You know, 2 things. Number one, contact sports. All of these kids are, you know, they go to school for that. They love to play basketball. They want to cheer. They want to play football. They want to, you know, play tennis. It's like me. They close a tennis court, and that is not a real contact sport. But they still won't have you on the tennis court. The psyche of an athlete is the first question I want to ask you. And then the second question I want to ask you is, how are we going to maintain any sort of physical distance when we're dealing with contact sports?
Okay, so that is a big discussion that was day in, day out, the entire summer with my department as well, because we teach teachers how to teach. So not only that, we had to figure out how the heck are we going to teach all these sports without the contact, but also how to teach it to our future teachers so they don't feel, in any way disadvantaged when they're going to be teachers. So no, you cannot teach contact sport in a contact way under these circumstances. That's not going to happen. Okay. If we accept that the virus is, distributed the way it is, then we cannot do that. So even if we go back to teach physical education or anything like that, the beauty of it is that every bad thing, something good grow out of it, or new grows out of it. So now I see everywhere online, all these physical education activities, online activities popping up. So people can actually do it. So the only way I can see this to be safe is either during the fall, outdoors, we can do certain activities that are individual activities. The students could have their own bags. So for example, we will has a disinfected a bag of equipment for the children, and that is their bag of equipment to do their own individual activities. That's all I can see to do, because in the moment we start exchanging them, then we have a problem. So I don't see it in any other way.
What is a sport without a butt slap or a high five? I mean,
it's nothing. Even if you think about, if you want to play Ultimate Frisbee, for example, which is fantastic, it's an invasion game, so you can actually, play it as a team. And you can even maintain some social distancing by not having man-to-man defense. You can do all those things, but you're still exchanging and throwing the frisbee and some catching, throwing. So it's either we make a decision that we are okay with it or we are not okay with it. It depends on how we monitor and how we accept the virus itself.
You are teaching in a college setting, but
yes.
Do you have any thoughts on these kids going back to school? I'm telling you, brains, I wouldn't send my kid back to school. But again, I'm afforded the luxury that I could stay home. A lot of parents are not afforded the luxury of being able to stay home. They got to feed these kids. They got to provide a roof over their head. And that, 7-8 hours that these kids are at school is really, not only are they learning, but they're also being babysat at that time. The teachers are terrified. They are absolutely terrified to go back because they have underlying conditions. They have to go home to their family members that may be at risk. What do we say? How do we not quit?
Okay, so can I be controversial?
Yes, you are on the edge, honey. That's what you do. Right okay. Here. This is your spot, what you do.
All right, okay. So because I have been studying the different potential treatment options. I've been studying and really reading all the statistics that are out there, which is not a fun read if you're not into it. So I'm not gonna talk to you about the statistic. What I'm gonna tell you about is what I saw was there are a variety of countries, including not just Iran or India, but also Israel, for example, and including China as well. There are a variety of countries that have taken one medicine that has been one of the most controversial medicine, the hydroxychloroquine with the zinc. They have taken that medication. And they have taken it also as a preventive measure because naturally they were taken as a preventive measure, especially in India, because there is malaria. There is already these existing conditions. And they have come out, if you look at the statistics, they have come out with maybe 1/5 of the infections and the deaths as all the other countries that either did not have that medication, did not take that medication, or did not allow that medication. So if I can be controversial, if I would need to go back to work as a teacher on like full time with the students, I would take it as a preventive measure and I would try it out, especially if I don't have, and of course, one of the biggest issues about that was the heart condition, that it's supposedly causing heart condition. Well, all the studies that have shown that it was causing some heart issues were the dosages were in toxic level, not the normal, you know, 300-400 milligram level a day. So this is what I would do if I would have to go back, and I would go back with much, much easier heart.
Wow. Well, that you're the first one, because I'm telling you, I'm resisting anything 45 has to say. I don't care what it is.
I understand that, and that's why I feel so proud to be in the middle at everything, because in Europe, when I was growing up, I learned very early on that I will never, ever, ever, ever listen to politicians because they were leading me and leading my country into poverty. So that was something that maybe at 6, 7, 8 years old, I made that commitment. And so when I'm here in America too, I just followed the same thing. I am looking to see what the data shows, the data that's not skewed by pharmaceutical companies. And that's what I look at. And I dig as deep as I can. Am I like perfect in this? No, but it's worth looking at it from a non-political perspective. Right. Just take a look.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm asking. If you're afraid.
I appreciate that. And I love that. I love that perspective. I love that opinion, because we've been hearing no, no, no. And so you have opened up our minds to give us an opportunity to explore something. But as we talked about the mind, I want to talk about the mind of an athlete. You know, it's a certain mindset to an athlete that is like no other. I mean, you look at people, the late Kobe Bryant, who was so hard to speak about him in the past tense. But yes. You talk about Serena and Venus. Mm-hmm. You talk about these football players. It's ingrained in you to win, to never give up, to already see the end destination. What are you instilling in your athletes to ingrain that in them and help them feel comfortable, you know, with winning and or even losing, you know, challenging? What is the mindset of an athlete?
Okay, so what I'm going to tell you, it's not just for the athletes, is for also the second group that I love, love, love to work with, which is entrepreneurs, because I help newbies to build their businesses so they can, you know, get strong and not get stuck on things that really turn their dreams off. And one of the biggest, biggest problem that I see in sports, as well as in entrepreneurship, and really in every aspect of our life, is that we are not focusing on the moment. Now, everybody says, oh, that's not a big deal. I mean, this is like cliche. Okay, so listen and hear me out. So let's say you want to compete, okay? We need to redefine the word competition. In the moment we redefine the word competition, all the pressure that athletes, CEOs, corporations, entrepreneurs place on themselves, all that pressure is going to fall off. And the reason why is if competition is viewed as I am competing with myself to bring my absolute best to the table, to the game, to the next business, to the next enrollment call. If I bring my best, then the only thing I can do is win. In the moment, I compete when I go in this football. For example, Kobe Bryant, I'm telling you, I don't think he competed against anybody else. He competed and he practiced every time and he practiced.
Right.
Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, all these people, they were practicing against their own best. They may have visualized winning, but they were not visualizing winning over such and such person. They were visualizing over their own best and bringing their own best. And that's what, if people could understand that want to achieve something, because you're not going to achieve it because you're going to be stuck. You're going to be putting so much pressure on yourself that it's going to demobilize you when it's time for action.
And also too, what people are doing is they're chasing their tail, because there's always going to be someone that is going to be better than you. Mm-hmm. But again, if you bring your personal best to the table, then the only person that you are competing against is yourself. That's an aha moment, brains. Okay.
And I want to add something to that for you, is that body is, as we all know, and that was the biggest thing, biggest discovery I had about 12 years ago when I opened my mind up to energy and meditation, is that when I am competing within myself to bring my absolute best, mm-hmm. then all of my energies from the mind and from the body is completely funneled into the direction of bringing the best out of me. But if I worry about what this other person does, if I worry about if I make this move, what the move of the other person, if I worry about any of those things, those are incredibly important energy that creates oxygen in your system that allows your blood to flow, if your red blood cells to be unclumped and flow through your body. So this is physical reactions that you can create for yourself to optimize your performance. And I don't care if you're an entrepreneur or if you're an athlete, those are the physical reactions that would optimize your performance to bring your best if you don't worry about all this other stuff, because there's no control over that.
Yeah, because all you can control is yourself. You wrote a book, How to Survive yes. Life's Perfect Storm. Do you have that book there with you? Let me see.
Yes, ma'am. I have it right
well,
there for you.
Turn it over just a little bit because it's got a glare. Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Got a glare. We can't
That's
have it a glare.
All right. Yes. So now, what is inside the pages of that book, and why did you write that, Dr. Clara?
Okay, so this is a guidebook. It's a guidebook to managing personal career and relationship transitions and all those things. But it's also, my heart is in it because I've been wanting to write a book for a long time. All of us want to write a book in so many ways. Okay, most of us, I can't say all of it, but every one of us have a story that we want to share in some way, shape, or form, right? And so I've been wanting to write it for so many years. And in 2016, in November 2016, I got a phone call that my father fell and in Hungary. And we already knew that he was, you know, in a bit of a declining state, but he was doing great. I go home every summer. I was with him always a couple of weeks and so forth. And he comes to Christmas. Long story short, he fell and he was in the hospital, and they were not letting him out of the hospital unless we established home care for him. And that was one promise I made to my parents, and I made to my husband as well, is that none of my loved ones will end up in a nursing home. Not because there's anything wrong with a nursing home. Don't get me wrong. So many of us have to do it. It's just because, again, it's the Hungarian traditional sense that family has to stay together.
Hey, and if we, that's in the Black American family too. You try to, you know, hang on.
You just hang on. I mean, if I don't eat, you don't eat, you don't eat, I don't eat, it's fine. But we just have to somehow do this together. So I went home and I started to, with the help, I was able to get some help, and we started to clean out the apartment, so on and so forth. So we were working 12, 14 hours a day to clean everything out, to set everything up, get my husband and my father home. But then at like 2 a.m., every morning at 2 a.m., I woke up and I was like, I got to write the book. And then the first couple of nights, and I'm telling you, for years I wanted to do it, and there was no inspiration. And it just came to me because watching my father literally trying for one more breath, for waking up for one more sunshine, for one more moment, to see one more sunset, to just see him for one more step, how much effort it took him to do that one more step, it just made me realize how precious life is. And again, I'm full of cliches, but it's just the way my life has been.
It just
made me realize that. And I said, holy cow. And that's when the inspiration came. So I wrote this book literally in 4 weeks, 5 weeks, every night, 2 a.m. to like 6 a.m. I would get up, inspiration would come for 3-4 hours, and I wrote it.
And so you're working with women entrepreneurs. So you have this book as a template. What are some of the things inside the pages that you're sharing with the women that you're working with?
Actually, I'm also working with men as well. It's shifted on a way because I realized that both population is desperately needing direction of how to build a business. So this book is more about the life transitions. What I'm doing right now is more that once you decided, okay, I want to become an entrepreneur, It's either you had a job and you don't have it anymore, or you have a job that you just don't want to go back to for safety reasons, or just like you and me realize that we need to be home. We want to be home, and we can do we can use our genius from home. So the most important things that I help people with is making that transition, is to be able to, you know, my favorite thing is that I try to say is the hardest part in making this a transition is when you're literally stuck, like imagine like a monkey bar, mm-hmm. and you're trying to go from one bar right. to the next right. bar, and you're like right there, and you can't make your mind up and say, okay, if I don't go there, I will be so upset my rest of my life. But if I try to go, I may fall. But if I fall, if I just make that, then can I let go of this?
Right.
And if we don't let go, we don't reach, or we don't let go, that's when we get stuck. So I help people overcome that transition right there, right. where, you know, we work out what pleasure I
swing, is. Dr. Claire.
What?
I said, you're teaching them how to swing on the monkey bars, Dr. Claire.
Because sometimes we have to go back a little bit, like in my business, because out of the blue, 4 years ago, all these caretaking responsibilities started on me. So first my father, then he passed away in 2017. Then my mom gets sick, has three strokes, 2018. And then my husband has three strokes in 2019. So it's like literally the last 4 years have been all about refocusing, you know, and stepping back on that monkey bar, because I was in fully transition. Right. To go and scale my business higher. I had a really, really, really good individual high-level mastermind. But then I had to go back a little bit, but I can't stop wanting to help entrepreneurs. So I had to keep doing it. So I find a way to do it even with the caretaking.
Give us some suggestions on caregiving. I'm a caregiver, you're a caregiver, but you have been through, you know, people with a stroke. My mother had a stroke. We were in the car and I saw the side of her face drop. And it was mortifying to me. I had never seen that before, and her words wouldn't come out. And I said, something's not right. I drove right to the hospital, and they gave her this incredible drug, TPA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
That, I mean, within hours, and she's in there barking orders now. She wants lunch. So, but, you know, to be a caregiver, number one, is one of the most selfless things that you can do, because you are, you know, physically, mentally, financially, spiritually, and sometimes you want a break, you know, sometimes you want a break, and your emotions get involved. There are parents out here that've got to send these kids back to school, or maybe not send them back to school. They have special needs in those environments. Can you give them some words of encouragement and some of the things that you do to create a work-life balance? Now, I know you play golf, so you probably get a bunch of hole in ones and you're a hell of a driver, you know, but you know, what are some simplistic things that people can incorporate in their lives to just to kind of give them some sense of balance? Cause it's rough. I know.
The best hole in one is in the 19th hole when I hole in one a beer. That's my best hole in one. That's the one I like the most. No. Okay. So again, it's gonna have to go back, and again, it may be something that your viewers or listeners would say, oh, come on, it's not that simple. Honestly, it's actually that simple. When, and again, it comes down to beliefs. When you are presented, like you are in a particular life situation, whatever this life situation is, you have literally three options. Option number one, get out of it. Leave it, go somewhere else. But if you leave, you take yourself with you. So that option, you know, when you go somewhere else, it may become again an issue and an issue and an issue. Number two is you look for what is in there that you can change and live with. And then you take that action and you change and you live with it. Number three is what I noticed to work the most for me. And I do believe that those people who follow my advice feel an incredible weight falling off their shoulder, is that anytime, and it's daily, where something happens, even several times daily, because like, for example, I had to explain the remote control 10 times a day, okay? So anytime when these things happen, in the moment I feel that the emotion is taking a grip, I literally take a breath and I say, I chose this. I chose this.
It is, and it is a choice.
It is a choice, because honestly, even if I say, oh yeah, but what am I going to do if my children and my mother and whatever, I said, plenty people out there do not have their parents with them. Plenty people out there don't have children. It was a choice somewhere along the way. And if I chose this, and that's the second layer to it, if I chose this, then I was also made for it. And if I was made for it, I will be given the tools right in time.
Wow.
And that's how I feel.
Well, that is, you know, sometimes I say, you know, I wonder, is it a choice or is it mandated by God? It's a choice, because again, there's a lot of people that say, hey, there's facilities that can take care of my child. There's a caregiver that could take care of my parent. You know, this is not something I want to do, but I find so much joy in to see, you know, that I'm making a difference. My mother's got this thing about getting her back scratched.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. That's the thing.
I'm telling you, that is the highlight of her day. And then I put a little oil on it, and I'm the best kid in the world, you know, yes. So it's the simple pleasures, but I look at that and I have a child of my own, and I'm hoping that if I'm ever in need, that she will want to make the choice to be with me. And I am so glad that you have made the choice to be here on the edge with me and my brains. I think you are amazing, Dr. Clara. You really, really are. And I can't wait to see you in other competitions. I'm going to be following you, Brains. I'm going to be posting some of her short video clips that she has, that she does on her Facebook Live, to really kind of get you in the same mindset, because there is a different mindset in an athlete that can be transitioned over into a parent, into a business owner, into a great relationship. It's learning mm-hmm. how to deal and learning how to deal with yourself. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Dr. Claire, if they want to, you know, do some deep diving, and especially if they want to get a copy of that book.
Yes, the best way really is where you will get, meaning your audience will get the most out of my teaching, and it will impact them the best and the most, is if you choose to drop into my free Facebook group, the Rock Your Resilience and Rebuild. Rock Your Resilience and Rebuild. And that Facebook group, I do every single week. There is always going to be teaching in there. There's always going to be stuff that you can take with you, that you can apply immediately. And you can always ask questions. I do lives when people asking, like they message me on the side that, you know, Dr. Clara, we really are stuck with this or that or the other thing. I share a ton of free content there, because I believe that you need to get to know me before you start working with me. So we are good for each other. And this is my free group, and we are nearing 600 people in just 3 months. So completely organically, because people just like what I have to say, and they like the support that they get from each other, which is also very, very essential for us.
And you're a very progressive, competitive woman, and we love that, and we need that right now. So thank you so much for being here on the edge with me and my brains. Brains, I need you to go and subscribe. We've had this conversation. Hit that red button on YouTube. You can go and subscribe to the Blog Talk. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on iTunes. I'm all over the planet. And I'm here for you. I only bring you the best and the brightest. You know, there's a vetting process to be on the edge. I'm not going to bring you sloppy seconds, because I want you to be smart. I care about you. I love you. I want you to be competitive. If the only person you're competing with is the one inside your head. Thank you so much, Dr. Claire. Come on back and see me again, okay? You promise?
Oh, absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. It was really great, April. Thank you.
You're awesome, Sauce. Bye-bye.
Bye.